I think that it became really easy pre-pandemic to say hello, read what somebody wrote, and go about your business. I think that we have all learned that we're all in the same boat, more or less.
Hey there. Guess what? This is Future Proof, episode number 142. To be exact, I'm Bill Sheridan. I am your host. What the heck is going on? How are you? Hanging in there? I'm talking to you tax professionals now. It's been another crazy busy season, hasn't it? And it ain't over yet, folks. And I feel your pain, right? I've never prepared a tax return in my life outside of my own. And that's just not my game. But, you know, I work for y'all and I work with a fair number of you. And I know what you're going through. Believe me when I say I do. I know how crazy tax season can be under the best of circumstances, but then you throw in a pandemic and a couple of years worth of tax reform and economic relief and deadline extensions and all the rest, right? Not to mention the personal toll all of this has taken. We're all burned out, right? We're all feeling this pandemic stuff. Some of us have come face to face with tragedy. That's horrible. Can't get a whole lot worse than the last couple of it can always get worse, right? But the last couple of tax seasons, they've just taken a personal and professional toll that I don't think any of us have ever seen before. And so this one's for you, tax pros. I am raising a virtual glass in your honor and dedicating this week's show to you. And real quick, just speaking of this week's show, it's sponsored, by the way, by the Business Learning Institute, which delivers competency-based curriculum, courses, content, and community to maximize career trajectories and grow intellectual capital for organizational and executive leadership. Hundreds of courses by dozens of instructors and unlimited customization. Find out how the Business Learning Institute can help you by visiting blionline.org. So the inspiration for this week's show came from my friend and colleague, Mary Beth Halpern. She saw a tweet, actually it was on April 15th of all days. You all know the significance of that date, no doubt. But that tweet was from Kelly Phillips Erb. She's my guest this week, by the way. You might know her better as Tax Girl. Kelly runs a very popular Twitter account under that name. She has written a regular column for years for Forbes under that name, and now she's doing the same thing for Bloomberg. She gets interviewed by everybody about all things tax, right? CNN and Reuters and Time, NPR, ABC, CBS, MarketWatch, all the rest. You might not necessarily know that she's got her own practice. She is managing attorney with Erb Law based in Glenmore, Pennsylvania. That's a little west of Philly. But anyway, back to April 15th, she posted this on Twitter, and I'm reading directly here. She said, quote, "Important and serious note. While I joke with my colleagues at #TaxTwitter about getting through the tax season, I do think it's important to understand the toll that the last year has taken on the profession. It's not just the pandemic and constant changes in the tax laws. It's worry over clients and staff, many of whom are like family. It's not being able to get refunds to folks who may depend on them. It's being treated badly because of things we cannot control, being tired all the time. It's just wanting a break. So be kind. That is all." End quote. That was it. That was the tweet. And that just kind of boiled the last couple of years down really, really well, didn't it? CNN put it this way in a separate article from earlier in April. CNN's Jean Sahadi wrote this. She wrote, quote, "It's very hard to win a game when the rules keep changing as you're playing. That, in a nutshell, describes what accountants and other tax preparers have been dealing with at the federal and state levels as they try to complete their clients' 2020 tax returns accurately and on time. Quote, this has been my worst tax season in 30 years of practice, said CPA Harlan Levinson of Beverly Hills, California. So many hurdles have been thrown at us this year. Deadline extensions, new retroactive tax breaks, new guidance, and then revised guidance on how to incorporate all the changes. have been rolling out ever since the American Rescue Plan was signed into law on March 11th, which came a month after the tax filing season began and after 66 million returns had already been filed. Lynn Fuentes, a CPA in Jericho, New York, put it this way. She said, quote, clients look to us for guidance, and sometimes you look at them like a deer in the headlights because you're getting the information as quickly as they are, end quote. And many CPAs are actually turning away potential new clients seeking help because they have their hands full just handling their existing roster amid all the changes. This is another CPA, Brian Borowski of Waterford, Michigan. He said, I try to help as many as I can, and this is one of the first years where I've been sending people away, end quote. And again, that was an article from CNN. So yeah, it's been a battle. And this week's show is... it's for all you tax professionals out there, right? Our way of saying, look, we feel your pain. We know it's hard and we're cheering you on. We really are. We got nothing but love for all of you folks. And so does Kelly Phillips Erb, tax girl herself. She's our guest this week. So take a break, put your feet up, check out my conversation with Kelly. I don't know if it'll help, but it might ease the pain just that much, you know? So I hope so anyway. Here's me and Kelly Phillips Erb. I guess my first question, Kelly, is how are you doing through all this? I have to remind myself sometimes that you've got a practice of your own and the world kind of sees you as tax girl, but you're right there in the trenches too. I mean, how have you been?
Oh, well, thanks for asking. I've been good. It's funny. The practice side of things hasn't been as hard for me as the journalist side of things. And I say that because with my blog, a lot of folks send me email, questions. And those, you can't help everybody. I think it's different in practice because those are people that you've dedicated your time. I know their backstory. I know the right answer. We just have to work through it, right? But when you get the emails from the people telling you that they only have $15 left in their checking account and they don't understand where their stimulus check is, or the person who has lost their business and they just wanted to talk about it, or as I tweeted out, I think a little earlier, I had someone who emailed me just to tell me that his mother had died and he just missed her. And he just wrote me to tell me that. And I think it's because there's a lot of people missing people right now, and they're really focused on finance and they're really focused on paying bills. And that tends to be tax related. And so, I am the person they feel like they can talk to. So that's hard. And that I can't fix everything. And I will say, especially being a middle child, I want to be the fixer, right? So I think that's the hardest part. The practice for me has been easier than the email.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I didn't even think about all the issues that people would just because you're you, feel like they can talk to you about it. And you never really know what other people are going through, do you?
Oh, right. And I think I mentioned last year, I got 7,000 emails on stimulus checks. I mentioned, I think maybe on my podcast, that I get 7,000 emails last year alone on stimulus checks. It has not been as much this year, but the ones that I've received this year are more desperate. And I think that's where, and that's kind of what led to that tweet, right? Mm-hmm. I don't think people understand the emotional toll that being a person who helps people for a living, which is what we all do, right, is feeling. We all kind of joke about it on Twitter that, the hours are long. And that's to me, and, I don't want to speak for the entire profession, but for me, it's not the hours. And even, we joke about not being, not having a Saturday off or whatever, depending on the time of year, we've all done that, right? We've all done that multiple times. So I think, yeah, we're all tired, but I think it would be less of an issue if we weren't tired and then emotionally drained. And it's really hard feeling like you have to give answers when the answers are changing constantly and there's no real resolution. And I know, it always sounds like I'm beating up on the IRS when I say this, but there used to be a time when taxpayers would tell you there's a problem and your answer would be, here are the three steps that you take to resolve it. And usually it involved calling IRS, sending a letter, sending a form, you know, and it was done.
Right.
That's not happening right now because IRS is not being responsive. So you get the collective frustration of taxpayers who are, you know, maybe angry. And this is where, you know, on the practice side where I'm seeing it. So I think I tweeted out a picture of the response that I received this year telling me that they had received my 2019 correspondence, the IRS. And I'm like, you know what? Thank you. My client will be really so pleased to hear. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's not one thing, right? It's all of these things. It's being tired and overworked. Yes, but it is emotionally drained and then not being able to fix things the way that we've been trained to fix things.
Was it coincidence or not that you happened to post that tweet on April 15th? I'm just kind of curious.
Oh, you know, totally coincidental. Yeah. It's funny because, you know, obviously I think tax day was on my mind because I had in fact tweeted out earlier something about, you know, happy not tax day. And my kids all thought that was hilarious. But I do think that, you know, it was on my mind in that, I guess, in that we were still talking about tax season not ending. But I think it was just, it's just been a piling on, you know, watching other people in the profession be frustrated and talk about leaving. And it's hard. It's hard to hear people that you know love what they do think that they can't do it anymore.
Right. I was going to ask, tell me a little bit about that type of stuff. What are you hearing from tax professionals? I mean, what's resonating at this point for you?
This is going to be a weird answer, maybe. Because on one hand, I almost think part of this is good. Mm-hmm. Because I do think on one hand, it has reminded us all of why we like what we do. And also served as a reminder not to get so caught up in the work, like the need to work all of the time. This is something that, you know, Tony Nitti has talked about a lot, about, you know, being a leader in the profession and saying, I am going to take a vacation. I've actually been vocal about not working last weekend. Like I took a day off. Like I think it's important to say that we don't have to work all of the time. So, you know, I think that's important because I do think that there is a sense, especially amongst younger people in the profession, that this is what you have to do and it's not what you have to do. That being said, I'm hearing a lot of burnout stories because, you know, we joke and I mentioned a retweet. I can't say all of it because some of it was probably not safe for work, but there was, you know, people were talking about it being March 403rd because, you know, it's never ended from last year, right? Like there's not been a pause. So there's been a lot of people who are really tired. I think there's also a lot of people who are feeling underappreciated. Like we all have great clients that we love, but I do think that this year, you know, you're also getting the collective frustrations of taxpayers over the last year who are tired of the moving targets, who are tired of not getting the refunds on time, who are tired of not understanding what comes next. And they don't understand why you can't pick up the phone all of the time. They don't understand why they can't give you something last minute and have you do it. And I've seen a lot of chatter in the profession about that. And also about value. Cost is something we don't like to talk about a lot because it feels, I think there's, you know, it feels a little gauche to talk about what you're worth. Even though I don't think that's healthy, I think that we should be more, you know, you work hard, you should be paid for your work. But there is a lot of, you know, people who have given PPP information out for free and then had someone balk at the fact that your tax return was $20 more this year. Yeah. I've seen a lot of that frustration. I don't prepare returns. I do, you know, resolution. So I don't prepare returns, but I've seen a lot of preparers being really frustrated with the way that they're being treated. And again, not across the board. I'm not saying that taxpayers are beating up on their CPAs and their EAs and their preparers, but I do think there is a collective sense of frustration that people can sometimes take out on their providers that isn't fair or warranted. It's understandable. Like I actually do get it as also, you know, I'm a taxpayer too. You're a taxpayer. We all get it. Yep. It's still not fair or warranted. And so I'm hearing those. There are some people who, some of them have actually been very, very vocal on Twitter about this is the last year and on Facebook. This is the last year that I'm doing this because I do think you get to a point where you're like, I just can't do it anymore. And I've seen that where people are talking about maybe I'd be better as a professor, maybe I'd be better. So it's people who still like what they do. You know, I don't know that I see a lot of people saying that they're going to go live in Nepal and climb mountains. I don't think it's that kind of YOLO lifestyle change, but I do think it's a, how can I change so that next year isn't the same because I've done this 2 years in a row and it's not working for me anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, were we leading up to this anyway? Or, I mean, I'm trying to
think so.
Like how much of this is the pandemic and how much of this would have happened even if we weren't all locked up?
Yeah, no, I think that's an excellent point. I mean, that's kind of goes back to what I was saying. Like, I'm almost glad this happened the way it, but not the way it did. I'm almost glad this happened because I do think we were kind of doing this thing where we decided that we celebrate. You know, I worked 20 hours today. Like, that makes me a great person. And I appreciate the passion for the profession, but I don't think that celebrating working too hard and making yourself in some instances sick from working so much is something we should celebrate. I don't think it's something that we should insist that younger professionals model. So I think it's really important that we re-examine our priorities anyway. I think that the up and down of the economy before the pandemic had already created, like there were pockets of people doing really, really well and pockets of people who weren't doing so well, right? Before the pandemic even happened. I think what the pandemic did in the profession for, you know, tax and accounting profession, at least, is that it kind of exacerbated existing problems because we've all been complaining about IRS funding for years, right? That people aren't answering the phones. But then when they really honestly weren't answering the phones, it was a whole different world. And then we've all kind of talked about, you know, pricing, like how, you know, do you bill by the hour? Do you bill by the customer? Do you, you know, what's your value add? Like we've talked about those things and a lot of those things have not been resolved. And now it matters because you are doing things extra that maybe you haven't discussed with your clients the way this is gonna happen. And then you have all of that plus shutdowns and economic downturns and staff that's hard to hold on to and people that you know and love who are sick. I think it's a perfect storm. And so again, like on the one hand, I'd like to think we take something good out of all of this. And I hope that is kind of a look about the way that we're doing things. You know, Jody Paydar is very, very passionate about, you know, it's important to be a planner and to make sure that, you know, you think about the best way to be efficient. I think that efficiency matters. I think that's something we can take from this. I think that we can also take the human side. I mean, I do think that we've neglected how much we are all counselors and listeners for our clients. And, you know, maybe developing relationships is something that we need to think more about. Like maybe you are a person who does better with, you know, 20 long-term clients as opposed to 150 clients that you see every month. I think it's causing people to think a lot more about the way that they practice and whether it's working for them. Because I don't want to imply that it's not working for everybody. Some people I think are fine, but I do think, I know that a lot of people are not fine.
Yeah. Yeah. While you were talking, I pulled out this book that I've been reading, the latest book from Tom Peters. He came up with what he called the Leadership 7. And it's kind of like a COVID-19 version of what leaders must do in this type of environment. And I mean, just listen to his list. It's number one, be kind, be caring, be patient, be forgiving, be present, be positive, and walk in the other person's shoes.
I love that.
I think that's, you know, certainly those things were important before all this happened, but now it's critical really that we kind of adopt that human touch, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Because I do think, you know, there's a temptation, you know, depending on what you do, a lot of us are behind computers a lot of times. And it is sometimes tempting to think that, you know, you can boil a person down to a tax return or a schedule or a balance sheet. And, you know, they're bigger than that. And I think that is one of the biggest lessons that we've all learned over the past year.
And we've spent a lot of time here talking about things that aren't quite so good. What, if anything, are you hearing from tax professionals that is good? I mean, on the other side of the ledger.
Oh, I think there's a lot. I think efficiency is one of the biggest. So I think, you know, there's been a lot of time when we've sat around and thought about how can we make this better, but we're not ready to pull the trigger. I think that people are doing that. I think that the increase of technology in the profession, especially, so I'm on the tax attorney side. A lot of attorneys are notoriously technophobic. So I think that, you know, we've all been forced.
CPAs too, by the way.
Yeah. Well, we've all been forced to figure out Zoom and yeah. Even people that before didn't want to instant message and now they do. And so I, you know, and we're looking at different platforms and I have an automatic scheduler now. I've been thinking about it for years and finally did it last year. And I think that one of the great things that's coming out of this is that most of us are embracing technology in a really useful way, not just for the sake of technology, but how can it make our lives better? How can it free up time for us to do all those other things we just talked about, like build relationships? I think that it's brought the tax community closer. I think that it became really easy pre-pandemic to say hello, read what somebody wrote, and go about your business. I think that we have all learned that we're all in the same boat, more or less. Like even if you're an attorney, an EA, a seasoned participant, a CPA, like no matter where you are, C-suite, whatever, you know, it's actually a small tax world in the grand scheme of things. And I love that it's become a closer community. I think that's important. I think it's been good for our souls in the middle of all of this. I do think, you know, this kind of the thing that I talked about earlier about thinking about the legacy that we want to leave for younger professionals. And again, you know, modeling better behavior about, you know, not only the things that you said, like be kind and think about people, but also being kind to ourselves and not working all of the time. And I like that there are people who are loud in the industry. And I mentioned Tony, but you know, there are others that are being loud and saying, like, you know, take the day off. You know, go skiing, walk with your kids, do whatever it is that you want to do, and then talk about it to make sure that everybody else sees that you're doing it, because that's how we normalize that behavior.
Right.
So I do think there's a lot of good. I think there's a lot of folks who are thinking about ways to make the profession more accessible. We've been talking a lot about diversity and inclusion. I think some of those things were coming anyway, but I think the pandemic has given us some real context for processing a lot of that. I know it's something at Bloomberg that we've been talking about a lot, and not just, you know, ticking off boxes, but making sure that we hear lots of different stories and lots of different voices. So I do think that there's a lot of good stuff out there, and I hope it doesn't, you know, I hope the bad parts don't outshine the good, but I don't want the bad stuff to get swept under the rug either. Because I will say that one of the things that has bothered me in this conversation that folks are having right now is the notion that many of us are privileged to have jobs. We are privileged to have been working the entire time while a lot of people were out of work. And the notion that we should not think about the bad stuff too, because we should just be lucky, I think is a really unhealthy way to approach things. And I've seen this discussion a lot, and I've even been guilty of kind of making some little jokes about it, because, you know, I'm like, oh, at least we're all working. I mean, yeah, that's great. I don't want to, again, I'm very glad to have worked last year. And I have friends that were laid off in the profession, especially the legal profession. You know, court wasn't open for a really long time. My husband, actually, you know, his law firm, it was something he talked about. Like there, I know that there are a lot of people that didn't keep working, and I hate there's been this little flip, but at least you're working, right? Like, I think that we need to find a place where we can be thankful and grateful that we're working without translating that into, but you can't take a day off. Like, there has to be a balance.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a not so fine line, I guess, between being grateful for what you've got and just closing your eyes to everything that's happening, right?
Right. And they were talking about this, especially in the legal world, about, you know, there's been a lot of, and we've seen it in banking too, actually, folks who are burnt out. And the answer has been, but you got paid, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why are you complaining? Because you got paid. And that's what I worry a little bit about, that especially on the messaging side to the younger folks in the profession, that, you know, if you're not feeling healthy, because it's been, you know, it doesn't matter how much money you have in the bank. Like, yeah, we all are lucky to have been paid, but being paid doesn't mean that you should be treated badly, and being paid doesn't mean you should be overworked, and it doesn't mean that you should be exhausted all the time and feel lucky to have a job. Like, yes, we're lucky to have a job, but that doesn't mean you have to take, you know, all of the bad stuff with it. There should be a, as you said, like there should be a balance. There should be a way that we can figure out how to continue to work and be healthy.
I think that is one of the, you know, as great as remote work and being able to do what you do anywhere you are, as great as that all is, I think that that's a real danger with this type of stuff, is that, at least it is for me, that feeling that, you know, when you're working from home, that you can work all the time. Your house, your home becomes your office, and it's easy to fall into that trap. And I think we have to remind ourselves every now and then that it's okay to punch the clock and check out.
Oh, 1,000%. My husband, who's also an attorney, has mentioned the same thing. Like, we actually, I forget which day it was, but there was one day last week where we were both done at a decent hour, and we were hanging out with the kids in the living room. And Chris says to me, like, I feel guilty. I feel like I should be working, because that is the, you know, I'm like, it's nighttime. Like, right. We've had dinner. We're hanging out with the kids. Like, we don't have to be working all the time, but you do feel that way. And I think it's a little different for him, because I've worked from home for years because I'm a mom. I've talked about this a lot. Like, it was important for me to be around. Like, I have an office still that I can go to, but mostly I've always worked from home when I could. My husband is more traditional on that. He went into the office most days of the week. He did do remote work because a lot of his clients required travel. So he's also used to working when he goes to Germany and, you know, on trains and planes and things. But I do think it's different for a lot of folks who have been used to going into the office who are now home, because they do have difficulties with those separations. I mean, I'm in my home office right now. I have the doors closed and I have a little sign that I put on outside so that sometimes I forget. My kids don't, you know, knock and walk in while I'm talking. So I have those kind of borders set up. But even then, you know, they come in and tell me, you know, Charlie had a hard time on his math test today. But I want him to be able to do that. That's part of the deal of being home. But I do think it's hard for folks who aren't as used to it. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think it's where because I can see that with my husband, that it's he'll sit outside just to have a coffee and be like, I have to go back in. I have to work. Yeah. I'm like, no, you don't. You can sit outside for 15 minutes. It's okay. You would be doing this if you were at the office. You would definitely walk down the hall, get some coffee, see somebody in the hallway that you want to say hello to, and talk for a few minutes. Like, that's okay.
Yep. Yeah. It's all about perspective, I guess. But I mean, how do you think this pandemic has changed this profession? Has it changed? Well, I think the answer is probably yes in some ways.
Oh, yeah.
But what are we going to look like coming out of the, you know, on the other end?
Well, I think we've all realized that we're going to continue to be asked to do more, right? I mean, we've seen this on the service side for a while. Like, the IRS is constantly being asked by Congress to do more things. Mm-hmm. Send out stimulus checks, send out child tax credits, process returns, take away people's passports. Like, there's lots that they're being asked to do. I think that, you know, there was a time when a lot of us stuck to one thing, but now we are having to field questions about PPP. And now we've all had to become payroll tax experts. And I say that tongue in cheek, please don't everybody think you have to be a payroll tax expert. But I do think that the expectation of what we need to know has grown. I hope that because of the networking that we all know somebody who is an expert in payroll tax or who is an expert in PPP that we can reach out to, so you don't feel like you have to know it all. But I do think that the profession, you know, it's kind of been moving in that direction a little bit anyway, right? This idea of multidisciplinary, you're not just doing tax, you might be doing tax in business or tax in advising. Like, there's lots of ways for things to kind of come together. And I think that to some degree that was happening before the pandemic. I think it definitely is happening now. I think that people are increasingly looking for one-stop shopping, and they're looking at their tax advisor to do that. Mm-hmm. I am hopeful that everybody, while there's a lot to be said, and I've actually talked about this on social too, I think there's a lot to be said for learning new things and expanding your practice, I think that's great. I think you should be careful and measured in the way that you do that. You know, we all need to stay in our lane to some degree. I think it's dangerous for tax practitioners to think they can do everything. And, you know, there is pressure, I think, in a post-pandemic world to do that because you've been relied on for so much stuff. I hope that everybody takes that breath and says, you know what? I don't know the answer, but I know somebody who does. And so maybe there's a lot more collaboration. I think that's really good for the profession anyway, because everybody, you know, it's the kind of thing we tell our kids, right? Like everybody's really good at something. You have to figure out what that is. And then that's your strength. Like that's your superpower. And then you want to surround yourself with other people who have different superpowers, because, you know, it would be a really weird, you know, Marvel world if they all did the same thing, right? So they don't. Everybody does something different. And I think that it's the same way in the tax world. And I hope that we remember that as we're being leaned on more and more coming out of the pandemic to do more stuff. Like, you know, how should I organize my business? What should I do about rehiring employees? Should I have everybody in my office vaccinated? You know, maybe that should I have everybody in my office vaccinated question isn't a tax question. Maybe it's an employment law question. Mm-hmm. So I hope that people, you know, on the plus side, I love that we're embracing new ideas about how the profession can look, but I hope that we're also smart about the way that we meet those challenges. And I hope that includes a lot of collaboration with other really smart people.
We talked a little bit earlier about some of the lessons that you know, we're hoping that we will all take with us as we emerge from this emergency. I mean, what lesson are you taking with you? What stuck out for you through all this?
Oh gosh. I mean, a lot. Very, very early on, and this is a non-tax thing, but it's kind of it relates to it. Very, very early on, one of my high school classmates lost his daughter to COVID. It was one of the first children that was publicized that died in the pandemic. And she was a couple of months older than my oldest daughter.
That's heartbreaking.
And yeah, and I was insanely sad for him, obviously. But the one thing that it reminded me early on is that, you know, we can't take things for granted. We can't take people for granted. We can't, you know, all this whole time we were talking about like working a lot. You know what? I want to make sure that I still have time for my kids, no matter what. I think that, you know, and I get, you know, not everybody, kids aren't everybody's priority, right? There are other people. It might be, you know, your plants. It might be your parents. It might be, you know, whatever it is that you love. Yeah. That's the thing that I've taken. Like, I hope that people embrace the thing that they love coming out, or other people that they love coming out of this, because I think that I was, again, reminded very early on about how lucky I am to have such great kids. And I want to keep, you know, stay around and have them know that I'm available for them when I need them. And then kind of the second thing I learned, I think early on, and this is very directly applies to the profession. There were a lot of people early on when all of this happened, you talk about working from home, who were saying like, learn how to macrame and you know, learn how to bake 20 kinds of bread. And there was a whole lot of that. And while that is fun, because I did some, you know, we did some fun things from home too. I think sometimes we need to remind ourselves that what we do for a living is enough, right? Like, we help people, like we provide really good services. We help people out of jams. We help people from getting into jams. We help them sleep at night. Like, we do really good things. We also don't know, you know, you don't have to know how to crochet. I think that was something because I felt a lot of pressure early on in the pandemic to like do something else, right? Like there was this whole movement to, like, you kept hearing about how, all the symphonies that were written during the plague and like what, you know, Newton and he developed all these theories during the plague. And I didn't have time for that. And so the other thing that, you know, I kind of think that I've taken from this is that that's okay. No. You know, there is nothing like, so if people are looking around their houses and like fretting about the fact that they haven't painted the wall they were going to paint, I can assure you that nothing in our house has changed that did not involve a third party coming in to do that work. Right. You know, so I do think, you know, just getting to another day is enough. And I think that especially as we talked about at the top of the program, with everybody being overworked and feeling really exhausted all the time, you don't need this added pressure of people telling you that you should have done more. Like, right. You know, you're good. You don't need to, I love to bake, but not everybody needed to learn to bake during the pandemic. So I think that there's a lot of that you know, a little over messaging, right? Like about how much you have to have done. And I think the thing that I've learned is, you know, you're just getting through during the pandemic, just keeping on doing what you're doing was enough.
Indeed. And Kelly, listen, thanks so much for the time. It's been, I love the conversation and I appreciate you taking the time. They call it busy season for a reason. And yes. I know how busy you all are. So to have you take the time and sit down and talk with me means a lot.
Well, thank you for having me on. I think this is such an important conversation and it's something that, you know, sometimes we talk quietly about, and I think we need to be louder about. So thank you so much for, you know, letting me talk about it.
Great stuff this week from Tax Girl herself, Kelly Phillips Erb. Where can you find out more? Where can't you? Let's start with Twitter, folks. Head on over to twitter.com/taxgirl and follow Kelly there. Be sure to follow the tax Twitter hashtag while you're there. Tax Twitter, that's that hashtag. Good stuff there. Read her stuff at taxgirl.com. Listen to her podcast at taxgirlpodcast.com. Sensing a theme here, right? And you can even go the old-fashioned route if you want. Check out her firm's website, which is erblaw.com. That's erblaw.com. And don't forget, this week's sponsor is the Business Learning Institute. The BLI's Future Ready Learning Framework outlines the skills that CPAs need to thrive in the rapidly changing world of accounting and finance. That framework is all about gaining and maintaining deep technical knowledge along with a strategic skill set. We're talking about strategic aptitudes that have been identified as most crucial for tomorrow's CPA. Start mastering these future-ready skills now by visiting macpa.org/future-learning-framework. Get back to work, gang. The end is near. I swear to God it is. Have a great week. We'll talk to you soon.